So with me now is a man that played 357 times for Everton, including 97 goals. Make that 98 if you include the first free kick against Ipswich. He also scored Ireland's first ever goal at a World Cup finals and also featured for them during the Euros. So, Kevin, it's an absolute pleasure to speak with such a legend. How are you holding up during the whole coronavirus lockdown?
I had an ankle replacement operation the first week in February. So I was in plaster for 3 weeks and I was in a boot for 3 weeks. So I was housebound anyway. So it's not really affected me as much as what it has other people.
Oh, nice. It's not the trusty left peg, is it?
It's the right one, actually, Mr. Stanley.
Is it the right one?
Yes.
That's good. And so I was just curious, like, especially for someone like yourself who's had a long career in sport, like, these are certainly unprecedented times and very unusual. I think you've got to give credit where credit's due. Liverpool have been by far the best team in the country this season, and they would have already won it by now had it not been for the lockdown. I was just curious, what is it like in the dressing rooms of the champions elect during this time of season? Because obviously you've won two championships yourself with Everton.
It's a dressing room full of confidence. You know, you've got you know you're the best team in the league. You don't fear playing against anybody. And as you said, I mean, they've been the best team by far this season. And you know, obviously, it'd be down to the government if they decide to start the Premier League again.
Yeah, and not many men have made that move from across Stanley Park, which obviously you did as a youngster. I imagine that comes with a very unique pressure. And my question is, how do you think you thrived under that so well?
Well, I spent four seasons at Liverpool, played mostly in the reserves, and we had a really good reserve team in that era. We won the Central League 4 years on the trot, and it was a proper reserve league. You know, if you were in the first team squad in those days, it was only one sub, two subs. So if you were in the squad, you played on a Saturday, 3 o'clock. So if the first team were playing West Brom away, you'd play West Brom at home at Anfield. And, you know, you were playing against first team players. So the gap between the reserves and the first team wasn't as great as say, maybe it is now. And I was training with world-class players day in, day out. So even though I only made a few appearances for Liverpool, I left Liverpool a better player, and I was, you know, ready and equipped to, you know, for playing at the top level.
Definitely. And how did that move come about? Because obviously Howard Kendall at the time, I mean, when he'd originally come into Everton, I mean, obviously I wasn't alive in there to see it, but from what I've heard, especially during those early days when he just come in, there was quite a lot of pressure around him, the club, and his position. So I was just curious, how did that move come about?
Well, I was in Diggs in Elsie Road, which is just around the corner from both Anfield and Goodison. And on a midweek, I used to go and watch Everton, watch their home games. And I saw the team that Howard was putting together. I saw Graeme Sharp make his debut. Adrian Heath signed from Stoke for £750,000. Kevin Ratcliffe. So I could see the sort of side that that Howard was putting together. And it was the last game of the season, my fourth season, and my contract was due to expire. So in those days, I was able to choose which club I wanted to. And the day before the final game of the reserve season, I was playing for Liverpool reserves away at Preston. And on the Friday in my digs, I got a phone call off a pressman, Colin Wood, who worked for the Daily Mail. And he said, would I be interested in signing for Everton? I said, yes. I thought it was a wind-up. I thought one of the players winding me up sort of thing. And he said, well, put the phone down and Howard Kendall will ring you. Sure enough, put the phone down. 30 seconds later, Howard, the boss, rang up and said that he was interested in signing me. He was going to come along and watch me play for Liverpool reserves against Preston and, you know, do the best that I could. So I must have done okay, because a few days later I got a phone call from Harry Cook, who was the chief scout, to go to Belfield to sign for Everton.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I think that's a testament to Howard and the relationship that he could have with people, because you wouldn't really hear of a relationship between a manager and someone of the press like that these days, really. I had the opportunity late last year to speak with some of your teammates at the premiere of the film dedicated to Howard. Speaking with Derek Mountfield, I quizzed him on the amount of goals he scored, especially during that 84-85 season, because I think he was in, you know, he was in high double figures, which is absolutely insane for a centre half. And you know, he paid tribute to you. He said, when you've got the likes of you and Trevor Stephen playing balls into the box, and you've got the likes of, you know, Gray, Sharp, Heath, and himself making runs, it's virtually impossible not to find yourself on the score sheet. So I was just curious if you could take your pick out of the players, that the attacking players that you played with during your time with Everton, to be in the box, and you, for you to be swinging a ball into the box, if you could take your pick, who would it be to be on the other end?
Well, just to go back to Derek, I mean, he was a natural goal scorer for a centre-half. And when we used to get free kicks, if I was taking them, Derek was always the first one on the move. So I was always looking out for Derek. And sure enough, he'd make the first run across defenders. So I think the semi-final goal against Luton, where he scored my free kick, I think that sums it up. I was looking for him, and I managed to put the ball on it, and it was a great header. So, you know, Derek was really a marksman in those days. And, you know, I think that was a big help, because when you win the league, you have to have a lot of players who can score goals. You're not reliant on just one or two players to score like your strikers. So it was the same in probably... If I was putting a cross in the air, Sharpie out of the strikers, we had a great understanding where he was going to run. He'd either get across the defender, or he'd look as if he's going to get across the defender and he'd pull off behind him. So I had an understanding of where his movement was. I was fortunate to play with a lot of great strikers, but probably the pick of them for me would have been Adrian Heath. You know, because he was only small in stature, but his movement, again, I could play one-touch football into him because I knew exactly whether he wanted it short. He'd go long to come short, or he'd come short to go long. So just had a really telepathic understanding with Inchy. But as I say, Andy Gray, you know, you just put the ball in the box and, you know, fearsome, and he'd get on the end of it, you know. And, you know, Gary Lineker, I mean, he scored 40 goals for us. Sharpie scored 27 that season, but we finished runners-up in the league and runners-up in the FA Cup. So, you know, and we didn't get enough goals from other positions in that year to actually, you know, do the double. So, but out of all the strikers, as you say, I think I put Inchy just slightly ahead of the others.
That's certainly interesting. You know, the elite talent that you played with, that's a huge credit to Inchy. I know you touched on the 85-86 season there, which I hope to talk about later. But just on that, I suppose, the start of things from the 83-84 season to, you know, the season where we did the double. Speaking with the likes of Peter Reid, Andy Gray, Graham Sharp, I asked them to take their pick of the bunch of their triumph. So if you could take your pick out of, you know, the FA Cup win against Watford, the win in the league the following season, or of course the European Cup Winners' Cup, of which, you know, you scored in the final, if you could pick one of those campaigns as your favourite, what would it be?
I think the first championship in 85. I think as a young lad growing up, you aspire to be a player. And you know, the best team always wins the league. There's no fluke in that. You know, over the course of the season, the best team wins it. And you know, that team in 85, I mean, before the game, you're getting changed in the dressing room, and depending on the opposition, you knew if everyone played to maybe 60-70%, depending on the opposition, you know, you'd beat them. Obviously, the better the teams, the better your performances had to be. And I think that season 85, I think the performance against Man United at home, where we beat them 5-0. And they were a top team, and we just destroyed them. They got away with 5-0. It could have been 8 or 9 easily. That was, you know, anybody says to me, what was the best team performance I played in? That would certainly be, you know, highly, highly right up there.
Yeah, and you managed to get on the score sheet twice. So that was an absolutely fantastic result that I still hear about today when I'm talking to, you know, family and all the friends of that generation. Another sort of key moment of that season that often gets brought up and is heralded as Goodison's greatest night is that semi-final second leg against Bayern Munich. I've heard many stories from in the stands and certain players of their experiences of that night. I've just wondered, you know, what were your thoughts and feelings in that dressing room? And did you realise at the time it was going to be such a significant night in the club's history?
We don't at the time. You know, it's a special night. Any European night at Goodison, with the floodlights is a fantastic experience. But certainly, you know, just on the team bus going, you know, getting around Goodison, it was just rammed outside, and you just knew from then it was going to be a special night. Coming out, you know, coming up the steps to go out to the warm up, again, it was just electric. But actually coming out for the kickoff, once you hit the top step and you're out into the Goodison atmosphere. You know, I've been fortunate to play in big games all over the world, but if anybody said to you, what's the best atmosphere you've ever played in, that would be that night. You know, it's really, it was 55,000, more than that probably there, all Evertonians. And it was just, you know, we went behind just before half time, and you could hear a pin drop. It was just silence, you know, when the ball hit the back of the net. But the good thing was the second half, we were kicking towards the Gladys Street. We always try to do that. Kevin Ratcliffe as a skipper, you know, we always used to try and kick to the Park End first half and then kick to the Gladys Street. Because and at halftime, Howard just said those famous words, you know, just get at them and just, you know, the Gladys Street will suck the goals in. And certainly that second half performance, you know, was the final. I mean, you know, we beat Rapid Vienna, but that was the actual final. And that second half performance, you know, and they were a top team. They won the Bundesliga. Well, they went on to win the Bundesliga that year. And just, you know, Sharpie got the first goal. You know, brought the house down. Andy Gray got the second goal. And I always remember the third goal. I had the ball in the left back position, and I was waiting for Andy to make a run. You've got 55,000 people shouting "man on" sort of thing, like, you know. So you have to hold your nerve at times. And I played the ball, waited for Andy, played it into his path. He's played it square to Trevor Stephen, and a brilliant finish. And that was game, set, and match. And again, when the ball at the back of the net, the atmosphere and the noise at Goodison was unbelievable, and it was a fantastic memory to treasure.
Yeah, and that run by yourself, watching it back today, is absolutely brilliant. The way you just glide past players just effortlessly. Almost. I was wondering, because obviously you mentioned there Trevor Stephen on the other side, on the other flank, and he's a tremendous talent in England international. Compared to the modern game now, you'd almost be classified as wide midfielders rather than wingers. So I was just curious from Howard and obviously Colin Harvey as well, who is assistant coach, what did they expect from you as wide players?
They expected quality at some stage in the game. You know, Trevor, you always knew he was going to beat the fullback and get a cross in. So that's why I scored so many goals, because I was always ready to get in the box, because I had the boss gave me that license. He knew I could score goals. So he was more interested in my going forward and attacking players as regards to my defensive side of the game. You know, he always had a good left back behind me, because that allowed me to actually, you know, get into the box and create and score goals. So yes, but Trevor, I mean, as a modern player, he was a great athlete, really technically, never gave the ball away. And he had Gary Stevens behind him, who could have run for England. He was an absolute athlete. And those two getting up and down the right-hand side was a big part of our success. And obviously, you know, the left-hand side. So we were encouraged to more or less stay wide, unless, you know, when Reedy and Brace were together, they'd win the ball and they'd just supply to myself and to Trevor. So we had a great understanding. Everyone knew their roles. But I have to say that Howard Kendall, the boss, was a great man manager. He gave me 100% confidence. I wasn't frightened of making mistakes, because he had that much faith in me. He knew I could create or could score a goal. And that was a big part of me being able to be, you know, play with freedom.
Fantastic. And you mentioned there, obviously, Gary Stevens, Trevor Stephen was almost concrete down the right-hand side. What I found quite unusual about that season was the changeover of left-back from John Bailey to Pat Van Den Hout. I was just wondering, did that cause you to make any alterations in your game, or did you improve?
Well, Pat was a sort of right-footed left-back, so I always knew he was going to cut inside, but he'd always like to supply me with his right foot. So, and he was an excellent defender. I mean, Pat could play left back, right back, centre back, and he was a real solid defender. So again, that encouraged me to be able to get forward. And Pat was a great athlete, the same as Gary, where he could, you know, he could run for fun, and he was a real strong defender in 1v1 situations.
Brilliant. And now, obviously, you said that the semi-final against Bayern Munich felt as if it was the final itself, as Rapid Vienna were, you know, they didn't have a patch on us, really, to their credit. You obviously scored that winning goal in Everton's only European final. What are the thoughts and feelings as you put that ball in the back of the net?
It was just, it happened really quickly. I mean, we scored, Andy Gray scored the first goal. Trevor Stevens scored from a corner I whipped in, and we were cruising. But they had a striker at that time, Hans Krankl, and he was a prolific goal scorer. And he just got half, you know, we'd switched off. I think our minds were probably cast towards the cup final against Man United on the Saturday because we were cruising. And out of nothing, Hans Krankl, you know, scored. And I think they were still celebrating a little bit. The ball got played up to Sharpie. He laid a great ball off to me. And so just on the edge of the box, and I could see their keeper sprinting out. So I just managed to dink it over him off the underside of the bar. And that was good. That was game, set, and match. So it put the game to bed. So we didn't really have any time after they scored. It was just straight down the other end and put the game to bed. So that was another memorable moment for myself. And obviously to win a European trophy was brilliant.
Definitely. And I've heard from my dad that it wasn't ideal having to make his way back from Rotterdam to Wembley in such a short space of time, which you wouldn't really get these days. What were your how did you cope physically with the fixture congestion? As in those days, fixtures just seemed to come thick and fast.
Yeah, it was just one big game after another. And Howard was a top manager. He made sure that our training was limited. You know, he wanted to say he was a big believer in saving players' legs, so for the likes of Peter Reid, Paul Bracewell. If they didn't fancy training on a Monday, he just let them go and just do a jog and stretch, because he knew he just wanted to save their legs come the games, whether it be midweek or Saturday. So he was really knowledgeable. It was just unfortunate. Obviously, it does take its toll a little bit. You play in a European final on a Wednesday. You travel back to Liverpool. I got back the early hours Thursday morning. You go home, rest up, and then on Friday you're off back down to Wembley. And I remember the final itself. It was an absolute baking day. It was one of the hottest days of the year. And it was a close game, and obviously they went down to 10 men, and then Norman scores a great goal. The only place he could have beaten Neville with it. So it was, it was a fantastic season when you look back. But obviously, it had the edge taken off it a little bit by losing in the final to stop us doing the treble, which we would have been worthy winners of a treble.
Yeah, most definitely. And as you touched on earlier, that we were bitterly unlucky the following season, as I believe we had a double. But it was basically wrapped up, and we had to sort of pull from underneath us almost. We then sort of in true sort of championship team winning style went and clinched it the following season. Would you say Liverpool taking the honours the following season spared motivation to go and win it again in 87?
I think so. I was bitterly disappointed. Obviously, we had a good team that was capable of winning it, and Liverpool just pipped us to the double. But, you look back, as I said before, it was a different style of football we played in 86. With Gary Lineker coming, he was more of he didn't really want the ball into feet. He was more of balls over the top to use his electric pace. So he turned, even if he put a ball over the top, it was a bad ball. He'd turn it into a good ball because he was just that electric, and he was a goal scorer. So, he scored 40 goals. He's done his job. He can't do any more. Sharpie, as I say, scored 27. But just because we played a longer style football, the midfield players like Trevor and myself were unable to get up into support as much. So I forget how many, I didn't score that many goals that season. Trevor didn't. And when you look back, we fell short on a few more goals to do the double.
Definitely. Have you got a sort of pick of the bunch in terms of your moments at Everton, as you'd say, as your sort of favourite moment during your 10-year stay at Everton?
It's difficult to pick certain ones out. Obviously, as I said before, winning your first championship
title,
that was the big medal, the European medal. And as I mentioned before, the performance against Man United. And it's just lots of big games, and the players that you play with, and the camaraderie you have. You'll always have that when we catch up. We have get-togethers and all that. We're still great friends. And I think that helped us during that period where we were successful, that you've got the camaraderie both on the pitch and off the pitch.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone, you know, everyone was on the same page as they were, you know, winning honours, major honours for the first time themselves. For people like myself, I was born in 1998. The best comparison of my age to make to yourself is obviously Leighton Baines. You know, absolute wonder of a left foot, set piece specialist. And he had a fantastic relationship with Stephen Pienaar down that left hand side, which is, you know, defining, particularly for people of my age. And you and Leighton Baines share in common the fact that you both scored 2 free kicks in one game. Obviously, he scored 2, both of them obviously being allowed against West Ham a few years ago. You unfortunately got that first one against Ipswich chalked off. I was just curious, what was the because I watched that free kick back, both of them. What was the little interaction with Peter Reid before you take the free kick for the second time? Did he try and take that off you?
No, it was the first one, I just got on the ball early. They were still lining the wall up, so I bent it in Paul Cooper's top right-hand corner. I was expecting referee disallowed it, which he did. Mm. And as I was getting the ball, Reedy sort of stepped in and more or less said, you know, what are we going to do now? So I can't really swear, but I told him just to get out of the way and I'll put it in the other corner. So I didn't realise at the time I'd done it, but I moved the ball back from the goal about a yard just to give me a bit more distance, because even though the referees sometimes pace out 10 yards, you never get 10 yards in the wall. It's usually about 8 yards. So I just thought, when I saw Paul Cooper, he just edged over to his right a little bit because he knew I could put it in his top right-hand corner, and he left a nice little space on his bottom left-hand corner. So I knew if I got it off the over the wall with a bit of spin away from the keeper, I'd have a chance of scoring. So I executed it perfectly, and you know, it was a great when it hit the back of the nets, and a lot of Evertonians of that age, they remember that goal very well.
Yeah, I think I've had plenty of people, but obviously, like in my family, say that's their favourite goal of yours. Mine, however, I was obviously going through videos, and it seemed like you only knew how to score good goals, to be honest. Like the goals are absolutely fantastic. My pick of the bunch is a certain free kick at the Kop end in 87, which you through the V sign up to the Kop. You made the habit of scoring against Liverpool in big games, which not many players do, particularly in my era. I know we got like Romelu Lukaku, and then going back to like Tim Cahill. Would you just say those experiences from like 84, 85 just acclimatised you to the big games?
I think so. I think you've got to have that mentality where you've got to have belief and confidence in yourself, because you're not always going to score goals. You're not always going to make a good pass. You know, there's times in games where things aren't going great, but you've got to, you know, you've got to have that self-confidence. And I think I've always had that from my time as a young player, made my debut when I was 16 for Hereford, you know, in front of a full house at Edgar Street, which was about 7,000 in those days. I made my second division debut against Fulham at Craven Cottage, against George Best, Bobby Moore. It was 28,000 people there. So you've got to be, you know, I've seen players over the years that are really good on a training ground, but put a crowd in front of them and they can't perform to the same level. So as I say, you know, to play at the top level, you've got to be mentally strong.
Yeah, it was the V sign just instinctual, because I know Dixie Dean says when he used to slot at the Kop end, he used to bow. Yeah. In front of them.
I never really thought about it. I didn't really have a signal or anything, but it was the free kick was the best I've ever hit.
Yeah.
As soon as it left my boots, I knew it was in, because it was rising. It was right in the top corner. I couldn't have placed it any better. But in those days, I mean, if you look at the footage, it was like half Everton, half Liverpool supporters in the Kop in those days. So it was just, I just went to the Kop and, as you do, just flicked the V's. So, I mean, again, a lot of it. And it wasn't anything detrimental against Liverpool or the Kop or anything like that. It was just something I did on the spur of the moment. I don't know why, but it just happened. And it's one of the best things I did.
Definitely. Now, 10 years as a career at Everton Football Club. I know, obviously, you went on to Newcastle and Blackpool, but 10 years is a very long time. Obviously, you joined in 82. You've obviously seen a huge sort of turnover and change during that time, because, as I said, I was born to the back end of the 90s. But from what I know, the 90s weren't too pretty for Everton. How did you sort of observe the change over time?
It was difficult at times, because you saw players of our great team leaving and players coming in to replace them, and no disrespect to them, but they weren't as good as the players that was leaving. I love playing for Everton, so I never really looked at moving away. I mean, my family was settled, my kids were settled in school. As I say, I loved going into training at Belfield. I loved playing for Everton. So it was just, you know, as I say, it was just the turnover. Obviously, not being, you know, getting banned from Europe was a big turnaround for the club and the club's fortunes. If you look back from the team, I think it broke up too quickly. And as I say, players came in that didn't take the club forward, and I think we went on a bit of a downward turn, should we say?
Yeah, I remember Neville Southall saying in the film The Howard's Way that we would have gone on to be the best team in Europe for the next 5 years or whatever the length it was that we were banned for. Do you share that sentiment?
I do. I mean, that's the biggest regret is not being able to play, you know, challenge for the European Cup. If we had a team that wasn't good enough to win it, then it wouldn't really be so bad. But to actually the team that we had, I know it was Bayern Munich, as I say, we over two legs, and they were a top team in Europe. We've proven we could do that. So to not have the opportunity to compete and try and win the European Cup, that's, you know, that's one of my biggest regrets in football.
Yeah, but I can't imagine how it makes a player in that team feel, because as a fan that wasn't even born at that time, it makes me, you know, really disappointed and angry, the fact that we didn't get the chance to realise our potential. But as you said, you see, you know, you really understood the club, you understood the values and the morale and you know, what's necessary to make Everton Everton, as it were. You did return to the club with the under-18s and worked alongside Duncan Ferguson. I was just curious, what have you made of the sort of, because there's been, you know, huge turnover since your time at the club, because we seem to be in a continual phase of transition. Hopefully now it's stopped. But you know, from your time at the club as a coach to now, what do you make of the direction that we're going in?
Well, hopefully it's in a forward direction. I mean, the club has backed the managers over the last three managers. You know, they've had the money to spend. Whether, you know, we have, at times we haven't brought in Everton players, and I think sometimes people don't understand and get what it is to be an Everton player. The crowd put huge pressure on you, and I've seen some of the players haven't been able to handle that sort of pressure that's put on them. So, you know, in the recruitment side of it, you've got to have, you know, good players, obviously, that can play for Everton, but they've got to be a certain type. You know, they've got to be mentally strong and be able to handle the pressure of and the expectation of what's required at Goodison Park. And
yeah, playing for Everton. Of course, definitely. And, I mean, it seemed like now we finally sort of hit the nail on the head with the appointment of Carlo Ancelotti, is that a sort of man with pedigree who is just respected throughout the football industry as a whole. Do you think, in a way, that you could make comparisons to Howard Kendall, in a sense, is just his aura and the respect that he commands?
Yeah, I think, you know, fantastic appointment. He's a serial winner wherever he's been. He's had top players to work with. And he'll know, I mean, he's been at the club long enough now, he'll know what areas that he needs strengthening. And I'm sure if he can get the right players and attract the right players, then he can be successful, because, you know, he's got the knowledge, he's got the experience. And I've, you know, read things about, you know, what players who've worked under him, you know, that he's a great man manager, which was Howard Kendall's, one of his biggest strengths was his way he could deal with players, the way players wanted to play for him. And Carlo, you know, seems to have the same type of, you know, aura about him. So hopefully, you know, he can bring the same sort of success that our boss did.
Fingers crossed. I mean, what's it been now? 30 years. And I mean, it was 14 years until we won that FA Cup in 84. I mean, it's been long enough. It'd be nice to see us pick up a piece of silverware soon. But yeah, Kevin, I just want to say thanks very much for your time. It's been an honour to speak to a legend like yourself, and I hope you keep safe and well during this whole lockdown.
Thanks very much, Max. Really enjoyed that. Okay,
pleasure. Stay safe. Pleasure. Take care, mate.
Okay, cheers.